Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
I don't know what that lady was on that day or where she was thinking, but I think she thought she was in the Matrix.
Welcome to Game Dev Advice, the Game Developers Podcast, your place for resources and in-depth conversations with other game development professionals. I'm your host, John J.P. Podlasic. I've worked at 10 different game companies, starting back in 1989 with the TurboGrafx-16. Over the decades, I've developed games like Mortal Kombat, Avengers Initiative, Beavis and Butthead, and numerous others. I now work for a startup called Level X. But this podcast isn't about me. It's about you and the game development community. So if you have questions or ideas, give a call, 224-484-7733, or go to the gamedevadvice.com website. I have a great episode for you today, so let's kick things off with the new Game Dev Advice. Today's guest for GDA 7 is Humberto Gamboa, or otherwise known as Tito. He's a 3D artist currently working for Level X and been in the game industry for 2 years. He's also learning tech art on the side to expand his skills. This is a different kind of episode as someone fairly new to the industry, but he has some interesting perspectives to share, along with some great stories. Okay, let's kick things off with Tito. Okay, so I've got Tito here today. Hey, Tito, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm doing great.
Cool. Well, let's start off. Like, how did you get started in the video game industry? Talk me through it.
Okay, so I got my first job because I worked on a Crohn's VR project.
Hmm. What is Crohn's? Just for the
Crohn's
audience.
Disease. It's a disease that happens in the intestines. It's a nasty guy. So I had my port show. I went to art school, the Illinois Institute of Art in Chicago.
Okay.
And at my port show, I was demoing Crohn's VR project. I had requested two tables for my port show. Everyone else gets one. I said I wanted two because I wanted to bring in my 3D printer, have my laptop playing my demo reel, and demoing my Crohn's VR project. So this Crohn's VR project happened because in my last quarter of school, March 2017, I started on this project. I worked at this media company. They hired us to do this VR project. They weren't really sure what they wanted. And I was like, sure, I'll accept this job. Me and a couple of friends from school got hired. And they told us they wanted a VR experience to show Crohn's disease. They wanted it to be interactive. Mm-hmm. And we gladly accepted. So it was like a 3-4 month project.
Okay.
And it was made in Unity. This was kind of my first dip into the game industry. I wouldn't really call it my first real like video game job, but it got me running with like actually doing a product in Unity, modeling for it, getting everything professionally done. So it was a great portfolio piece.
Yeah.
So I worked with that media company, and when it came time to my port show, that's what I had demoing at my booth.
Mm-hmm.
So at my portfolio show, I see these two dudes walking at me.
Scary looking dudes.
No. Yeah. Well, one of them, a scary looking dude, just like hair. Okay. Like timber man looking guy. And then...
That was Bob's Charles Manson.
Yeah,
period,
that was,
right?
That was
yeah, Bob's yeah, yeah. He had kind of the wild hair and the long beard, and the guy's a sweetheart, but he could
probably scare the crap out of you if you didn't know.
Yeah, him. Yeah. Bob looked scary at the time. And then when he talks, it's just like, it's me, Bob. And then and then Ryan Blake with him. So Bob Nelson and Ryan Blake.
Right. Ryan's awesome. Yep.
These two dudes start walking, you know, through the portfolio show, and they're passing by students. So I was the last one in my like row, I guess. So it was a bunch of other 3D students. And then it was me at the end. So they were going by looking, and they kept looking at my corner. Like, what the hell does that kid have? Like, why does he have two tables? Like, I could see.
Right.
They were staring like, yes. Like, that's why you get two tables. So they come over and, you know, introduce myself, the whole thing.
Right.
All the portfolio stuff. And then they tried the VR project. And they put it on. You know, to them, it's as good as I could do as a student. And then they're like, why do you have this? Like, why why did you make a Crohn's VR thing? Like, this is like just so weird. And then like, I had to explain to them, like, right. This was a project I did with the company. And me not knowing who these guys were or what they're doing, they're like, okay, yeah, like, this is cool. And then the whole introduction happened, like, they're level X. We're looking for, you know, a junior 3D artist. Here's our card and everything. We exchange info. Mm-hmm. And they tell me why they were interested in the Crohn's, because at the time, we're working on a Crohn's project. So it was just like a coincidence that I also had a Crohn's project showing. It was all really good timing, honestly, for my portfolio show. So we exchange info, and portfolio show happened as it did. Lasted like an hour after them start packing up, end of the day. And then me and my family went to go eat at a nearby restaurant. And then as we're sitting down to eat, I got a phone call from HR. And they're like, would you like to come in for an interview tomorrow? I'm like, yeah, of course I do. And my mom started to cry.
Really? Wow, yeah, that's pretty
like,
cool.
I was like, oh my God. You got a call the very same day.
Right. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
So yeah, it was all just great timing. And that's how I got this job. I currently work at Level X because of that portfolio show. And yeah.
Yeah. From my perspective, it was crazy because they came back to work and they're like, you won't believe this. Like, we were at that show and there was a dude doing a thing in VR for a colon game. And I'm like, what? And I'm like, no way. And they're like, yeah, it was like, he had this huge booth and a printer, a 3D printer going and, you know, the VR and, you know, this guy was awesome. And I'm like, wait a minute, he was doing a gastro game in VR and that's what we're doing right now. I'm like,
yeah,
you know, it's like, what are the freaking odds of that? And it was just, so serendipitous. It was just so crazy that that you had done that and that we were looking and that, you know, the planets aligned and we were there at that show and your portfolio was like, you know, heads and shoulders above a lot of the other stuff they saw that day. And that's why we were so excited. And that's why we called. And
yeah.
And then you interviewed and you're like, you started the next week, right?
Yeah. So like I was brought into the interview and, you know, I'm thinking just like a regular interview, I was talking with Ryan and I'd go home and they'd call me back like, okay, you did bad or you did good, you passed or whatever. No, the interview was hilarious. It was, I talked to Ryan, showed him my process and they're like, okay, let's go sign some papers. You're starting. I'm like, okay. Everything happened so fast for me that week. Like I was not expecting to get a job that quickly. I was just hoping that if I put as much as I can for a portfolio show, maybe I have a good shot at this. So it was all like really amazing. What's also funny about that is I think Ryan almost didn't go to this portfolio show. They had scheduled it on their calendars a couple months ago to go to the show. And on that day, they forgot. And I think, I don't know, halfway through the portfolio show, I think they got a reminder on their calendar like, oh my God, this thing is happening. Should we go? And they were like, eh, might as well.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, because and to be honest, you know, sometimes those shows are a bust, right? So not knowing you were going to be there and that you were amazing and doing all this cool stuff, you know, it was a roll of the dice to go. But we're all very glad that they went because, yeah, that was great.
I am very glad they went.
Yeah. So, you know, you've been doing this for a little bit now, not a ton, but I mean, you've got a couple of years under your belt. So like, what do you wish you had known when you started?
Oh boy. A lot of things. Just like the basics, what a real day-to-day workload would be like. What am I doing every day in this sort of job? Knowing that just because you're a 3D modeler does not mean you're going to be modeling all day. You could be tasked on a number of things. Like just being an artist can be helpful in multiple things, like just doing general stuff, working on, I don't know, screenshots, promo, just picking up fires when they happen.
Right.
I also wish I knew what were the up-to-date standards. Coming out of college, I learned a lot of my stuff that was taught was out of date or all used. That was a little heartbreaking, but then again, that media company job doing the Crohn's VR really, really helped with getting rid of bad habits and...
Learning new tools, learning new habits,
really figuring out what's the up-to-date standards, you know, because I don't know, my teachers were teaching some archaic stuff, outdated.
Yeah, and I hear that from people too. Like, you know, it depends on the school, it depends on your teacher, because, you know, there are people like Heinz Schuller at DePaul who are up-to-date and he's learning new tools and he's teaching and building and doing stuff himself. So it kind of feeds off each other and he's really and works hard at it. And they're, you know, to be honest, I hear about other schools where people are just kind of mailing it in or, you know, phoning it in the sense that they've got their curriculum, they got their thing and they just kind of do it and they're not staying on the cutting edge and learning the new tools and figuring out new methodologies and pushing students.
Yeah. So. And sometimes your instructor might not be in the industry or never has been. I also wish I knew how much knowledge there was. So I was pretty proactive in school, like, you know, keeping up to date with tools, and like Substance Painter was a big thing. When I was in school, no one was teaching it. So I took it upon myself to teach it to myself. And that was really helpful. But yeah, yesterday I found this amazing Discord with like CGI resources, a bunch of free plugins, and just people sharing articles and stuff. Like, I wish I knew how much knowledge was just free out there. And if you pick up on a community, you can really enhance your stuff.
Yeah. Ryan Blake talks about it all the time about how much great stuff's out there on YouTube and Discord and all those kind of environments.
I could have done most of my college online, just looking up tools, buying people's tutorials. There's a lot of great stuff out there.
Mm-hmm. What about industry people and getting help?
What you call it? I was totally unaware of industry nights. That's another cool thing. I don't know why. Again, my college didn't tell us anything about this or thought it was important information. But the industry nights that happen here in Chicago are immensely helpful. You can quickly get to know people who are working on stuff. Mm-hmm. Trade information. They're also really cool hangouts. There's just a ton of cool people working in the industry. And I don't know, I feel bad that I didn't know this before.
Well, no, yeah. And it's something you wouldn't know because you didn't learn about it at school. So people didn't tell you to do those things. Maybe you wouldn't know.
In a school bubble.
Yeah, right. And that's part of the stuff like with the podcast and things like that for, you know, letting people know that wherever you're at, in most cases, there are industry nights around, or if you can't be somewhere, you know, in person, that again, you know, Discord, YouTube, Twitter.
So many people on Twitter share a bunch of information, what people are working on and just like quick tips.
Yeah. And I think that's part of it too, is like just kind of not be in that bubble, whether it's school or whether it's, you know, just a work bubble, but, you know, take those blinders off, be looking around. Do Google searches. It's the same way with work, right? Sometimes you get just so caught up in work that you have blinders on there too, and you're not aware of all the resources and cool things that are out there.
Yeah.
So what kind of advice would you give someone looking to get their first job?
If you went to art school is bad. Again, these places are a business. They want your money.
Yep.
That's not super great. You might get taught by outdated people. So my advice is reach out to these resources, like go on Discord, go on Twitter, learn what people are doing right now, because you might have been taught outdated habits. And I've seen it in people coming out from college where they get in this bubble, and because of that, their portfolio is not great and it doesn't stand out. It just looks like, yeah, you went to an art school and you're not improving.
Right. Yeah, it's got all the cookie cutter same things from their class, and everyone's portfolio has those same elements.
You can start recognizing assignments like, yep, that's his portfolio piece because I had that exact same assignment in my class and it's in the portfolio show.
So yeah, when people see that, they're like, okay, so what? I've seen that, you know, 100 times before. Like what can you do in your portfolio that stands out and really is exciting and pushes the boundaries versus just like, here's my portfolio from the stuff I was assigned. Please give me a job. Like, right?
Don't do that. Do something cooler.
Right. Do something more. Yeah.
Reach out to communities. That's my biggest advice. Like once you start seeing what other people are doing, it really helps your portfolio. Just being on like ArtStation.
Yeah.
That really helps. You can quickly see what other people are doing art-wise. And if you're at that bar, or you can like easily compare, like if you find a junior artist on ArtStation, you can see, okay, does my work compare to this person? And if it does, well, that's already a good sign of, hey, you might get a junior position.
Yeah, like a benchmark to be like, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Or you see a bunch of junior stuff and your stuff's above that, like, wow, I'm kind of ahead of the curve. Or if it's below that, it's like, all right, I got to buckle down now and work on my, you know, my portfolio, because there are people ahead of me. And again, I talked about this with Mike Anicelli. It's like, don't use that as a reason not to work and get depressed or be like, oh, my portfolio sucks. It's just like,
as an artist, that's hard. We just all feel shitty about our work.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand. But I guess, just shake it off at some point and just use that as a fuel to be like, all right, I'm going to regroup and do this new thing, this new piece, this new whatever. And that's going to help set me apart, you know, versus just kind of just keeping everything the same and then, you know, wonder why you're not hearing back from companies.
Yeah. So like if you decide to apply for an art position, a junior position at a company, a great little thing you could do is, you know, do some searching, figure out who their junior artist is, who their senior artist is, and just find their art stations. And you can quickly evaluate yourself. Like if they have a certain portfolio piece, try matching your quality with that. You will probably pass their art test.
Yeah, no, it's a great idea. Because again, it's so out there right now. Like you just Google somebody's name in ArtStation or Twitter and you can find them. You know, 30 years ago, that wasn't an option. But man, everybody's out there. Yeah. Everybody that's smart puts their material online so that people can see it and share it and give feedback. So yeah, that's a great idea. Besides just kind of learning about the company, learning about the people within the company, seeing the work they do and seeing how you compare to the work they do and helping assess like your skills and areas that you can do something that may reflect something that they're interested in so that you have a better shot.
And then even if like you start looking at other people's work and it's off-putting, like I am nowhere close to this, that's okay. Just keep working at it. And also it's helpful if you like pick up a secondary skill, like a very niche skill.
How so?
For example, if you're a character artist and you're looking at all these portfolios and like, damn, my anatomy is not this great or everything, like keep on practicing those anatomy skills, but pick up something that other people may not want to do or don't have too much fun doing. Like one thing you can do is pick up Marvelous Designer and start working on clothing or clothes sim or get better at rigging. Like, you know, have this secondary skill that can be really valuable, because not a lot of people enjoy doing everything in a certain category of art. So, you know, some people may just want to sculpt all day, and that could be a bad thing, because like, what if you're signing up for a job and they're not just looking for a character artist that can sculpt? Maybe they want you to do clothing. They want you to do rigging and all these other things. So it's always helpful if you feel you can't do one thing that's as good as a senior artist, try picking up a cool secondary skill.
Yeah, that's a smart idea. And it varies with companies, right? So like some of the bigger...
It's going to vary so much.
Right. Some of the bigger companies, it's very, you know, kind of cookie cutter defined, like this is the thing, this is all you do all day, every day. Smaller companies, you tend to be a little more generalists and a little bit more agile and kind of like, hey, we got this thing that we need to figure out. Who knows how to do it, you know, versus having a mechanicalized with, you know, everyone is very segmented in what they do, where smaller companies, you get to wear different hats and pitch in and help, you know, especially with a variety of different types of work.
Mm-hmm.
So Tito, tell me about your current role.
So I started off as a 3D artist, generalist, but nowadays I kind of just do a lot of stuff. I think that's just how the nature of startups, you're going to be doing a bunch of stuff. So like on a regular day-to-day stuff, I could be, I don't know, 3D modeling, working heavily in Unity, setting up scenes, doing weird stuff with our projects at LevelX, VFX sometimes, working on promo images. It's all over the place, honestly.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of variety, which I think it's cool because it makes it interesting, right? It's not the same thing day in, day out. And you're building your tool belt, right, with different skills and different abilities. I see you talking with Thu about tech art stuff, which is...
Yeah.
That's a cool thing, too.
Yeah. I mean, our games at LevelX are hard. I mean, hard task-wise because we get weird problems like, how do you make, I don't know, an X-ray in a game? And then... Mm-hmm. We end up doing stuff like that. And yeah, we just get a bunch of interesting problems. So the R team has to tackle it in some way or form.
Right. Yeah, totally. So what are you doing to learn and improve?
So actually, because of how much weird stuff we get, I'm always looking at new tech. I try to get updated with Twitter and industry news like 80 Level. They're a really good site.
Yeah, it's a great site. Ryan had that great article on there.
Oh, yeah, Ryan was on there.
Yeah, yeah, it's a really cool piece he'd done.
Andrew's also on there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, just stay up to date with my Twitter now. I just have, like, a dedicated Twitter list of, like, a tech artist now. That's kind of where I'm leaning towards. Just trying to get better at tech art because we get so many problems where we need someone fixing this sort of stuff. So picking up Houdini... learning more procedural stuff, learning VFX on the side, just trying to be as a multi-tool as possible.
Mm-hmm.
If we need art that day, I can do that. If we need more techie stuff, I will try and solve that problem.
And again, that's smart that you're learning new things. And because, you know, you have to just always be learning. 5 years from now, there's going to be tools out that we don't even know about right now. So you have to be in that mindset of just like figuring out new tools, learning new user interfaces and how to get different objectives out of the tools. So that's smart that you're doing that.
3D changes very quickly. So if you're not constantly looking at what's new or learning a new weird tool, I feel like you can get behind pretty quickly.
Yeah, no, for sure. So what are you curious about right now?
One cool small thing is Substance Alchemist.
Mm-hmm.
So Substance is a painting software for 3D modeling.
Yeah.
And one of their cool tools is Designer. So you can make, you know, procedural textures in the way that they tile, and you can have a bunch of parameters that can switch on the fly. They're working on this cool new tool called Substance Alchemist, which is Designer with the help of AI, I believe. I've been trying to get a photo of it. So, like, you can take a picture of, I don't know, cement.
Mm-hmm.
Then take a picture of some mosaic tiling. You feed it those two images and it'll make cement mosaic tiles. It'll try to merge the two images together and give you a pattern. And you can fiddle with it, I believe. I don't know exactly like how the tool works, but I've been seeing some people on Twitter that I follow posting it, and it's just like, oh my God, it's awesome.
Yeah, it's really cool. I'm sure they're going to have stuff at GDC about it. Check that out.
Yeah, just procedural stuff combined with AI is going to be popular, I believe, in the future. I mean, so much stuff right now is becoming procedural and just amazing in games.
Okay. What about other things you're curious about?
So there's been a lot of layoffs happening lately. So I'm new to this whole game industry. So seeing a bunch of layoffs is scary.
Yeah.
I've been talking with, some of the artists that I work with and other people who've been around. And they've said, like, layoffs are a normal thing of the game industry. They happen, but there's just, like, so many happening in the past, like, month or two. Like, so much with Blizzard layoffs. Who else had?
Telltale had the huge
horrible. Yeah, Telltale. And then...
poorly managed one. That was a train wreck. Yeah, that was terrible.
Yeah, just Twitter is scary right now with how many layoffs are happening. And
say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores led by Walmart and Target are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
I'm curious about like AAA companies becoming unionized, if that's helpful or not for the games industry.
Yeah, I'm curious about that too. I see pros and cons to it because it does mean then there's a lot more standardization of titles and, drive up costs. But then there's also great reasons behind it. So I hear more happening in the industry about it. And yeah, I'm also curious about it.
Because it's hard to have a good, healthy work-life balance. And I don't know if unionizing will help with that. Being a small company, I think, helps us be, comfortable at work. And then we also have life outside of work. But from these huge companies, I don't know. It just sucks.
Yeah. And I think it's weird because there's, there's the crunch and the layoffs and things. And there's more and more outsourcing being done. But part of it is like, oh, okay, we can do outsourcing to relieve some of that pressure. But what ends up happening is it's just used for extra content, and it doesn't always end up relieving the the pressure and those kind of things. Because people look at the numbers like, oh, it's so much cheaper. But the revisions, the quality of work. There's some great studios out there that do outsourcing art, and there's some really bad ones. So there's risks involved in that too. But unfortunately, it is a hits driven industry. Right. And I've seen it, over the decades and been laid off, multiple times. I think the key is that companies are smart about it. And if they're going to do it, that they have money earmarked so that people, keep their benefits for a while and that they have some severance and it's not just, hit the bricks, like some of the places like Telltale.
It sounds scary to just be laid off with almost no notice or, the looming danger of like, we're going to lay off people, but we don't know who. Oh, well, you'll find out when it happens.
Yeah, that creates a lot of stress and anxiety when people are waiting for the shoe to drop. Yeah. Yeah. I've been through it. And it is part of it is, we've got to get better about it. And the other part of it is, again, too, it is a hits driven industry. So you have to stay up to date. You have to network, and you have to work hard and earn a good reputation, because it will happen at some point. And
reputation is really important, because you don't know where you're going to be, or just being connected with some people. Like if you get laid off, you can
reach out to people. Like, hey,
reach out to people.
Yeah, here's my portfolio. Is there anything going on there? Because it will happen. But the more prepared you are, and the smarter you are about your finances.
Yeah, Ryan talks to me. He's prepared me for this stuff. Like, it's gonna happen. So
right, and you've got a great mentor with Ryan, because he's been around. He's seen the dark side of the industry, and he knows important it is to always keep up to date and keep your reel together and be working hard so that when it does happen, you're not caught flat footed going, I'm totally screwed now. It's more like, oh wow, that sucks. All right. Time to hit some people up and see what's going on with other companies and other places. Because again, it's hits driven. So companies, especially big companies that place big bets on games and they don't pan out, it's only a matter of time until the whole thing caves in. And big companies, small companies, I've seen it at all kinds of companies, and companies need to be more prepared to take care of their employees when it, if it does happen, they're not high and dry, and employees need to be a little smart about just being prepared and having their finances.
Have a savings, like have at least 3 months of rent just prepared.
Yeah. And again, too, it is hard where you live, right? Because, and I heard this from the Telltale folks, you know, in the Bay Area, it's just obscene in terms of the housing costs, right? It's just like, how do you, and especially if you're junior or mid-level, I'm sure it's like crazy hard to save any money when, you know, your money goes to housing. You know, we're kind of spoiled that way in Chicago where it's much more reasonable. And yeah, you can live on the Gold Coast and spend tons of money. But if you want to live further out or be in a different neighborhood, you can have a more reasonable cost around housing so that you're not so redlining, you know, just paying for your housing. So I think that's a cool thing about Chicago too, in the sense that there may not be as many companies, but you don't burn as much of your money for your living expenses. So
yeah, Ryan just keeps telling me like, I joined at a good time and I joined a good place. I've missed out all that horrible nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah. Brian's seen some stuff, and I've seen my share that, you have to learn to roll with the punches and be prepared and don't get caught off guard, because it will happen at some point. So, yeah.
Okay. Quick question break. What are your thoughts so far? Do you have a topic idea, a question to ask, or a guest suggestion? Let me know at 224-484-7733 or on the gamedevadvice.com website.
So what are your thoughts about AR and VR? Just to pivot here.
Dead? Maybe? I don't know. I think it was trendy for a while, and then it's lost its cool factor. Mm-hmm. I still feel it's a niche product, the way it's being used. Like, it is cool for some games, like Beat Saber and Superhot are some really good games that are using that tech, like being super interactive and moving around. But I don't know. It's a weird tool. I think it's totally still in its infancy. People are still figuring out where it can live and its potential.
Yeah. No, and if you're talking about VR specifically, I've talked with Patrick Curry about that too, where it still feels like it's in its infancy, kind of like what PC games were like in the 90s. And the Vive is awesome, but it also still feels kind of hobbyist at times, where you're like, why is this not working? And you plug this shit back in and like, oh, now it works?
Or also just clunky. There's so many cables.
Exactly. There's cables and high-end video cards, and there's just all these barriers of entry. Makes it a niche. And I think, you know, a few years back, people were excited. Oh, we're going to go make a VR game and it's going to be huge and it's going to be blah, blah, blah. And then some, you know, companies and people got burned because it is such a niche right now that it is hard to make money at it, because there are so many barriers, especially on the PC side, to do it.
And even if you pass all those barriers, there's still not a lot of products. Like, there's maybe like a handful of games that are out there that are really good, but if we're just talking about gaming with VR, there's only so much you can play with it. I just feel like it's way too early. I think it should be used more in, I don't know, like construction, something more practical.
Architecture is a big use for it too, I know.
Yeah, architecture. I heard about, what was that thing? What was it? Google Glass was being used in some factory, I think car manufacturer. So the people working on the lines had Google Glass, and they would use it to scan barcodes and bring up manuals on like their side of the vision. Like, that sounds awesome. Huh. That's where I think it is totally cool. Like, just solving practical problem. Mm-hmm. Like, your hands are busy. Maybe you want a manual just hanging up on your head.
And I think too, because of the restrictions, because of the hardware, it can be clunky. And let's see what, you know, Oculus Quest does, right? Because, you know, the price point, not having the wires everywhere, and it doesn't have the graphic fidelity of a Vive, but, you know, just being able to set it up quickly and easily and not being tethered, you know, maybe that's going to be a breakthrough system or, you know, other things that are out there. I think it just needs to continue to evolve because there was kind of like this gold rush for it. And then I think some people.
Like everyone, like do everything in VR.
But I think it just kind of contracted a bit. I don't think it's contracting and going away. I think it's just kind of contracting, regrouping. The hardware is advancing. It's going to get easier to develop for. It's going to be easier for people to buy and consume VR content. And then it's going to have like another surge. It's just when and who's going to be at the forefront with that. And
Just like all technologies, like, I don't know, when the first Android or smartphone came out, I mean, it was only for a very small amount of people. Like,
yeah,
it didn't gain traction the very first day. Like, it needs time. People need to learn where it can be most useful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's, whether it's gaming or, you know, educational, like with Patrick Curry and Farbridge or some of the stuff that down in Ringling that's being done for different types of training. And, you know.
Yeah. Like training is another great solution for with mm-hmm. VR. Like I wish I could go on a field trip in class.
Yeah.
I would have loved to have VR when I was in first grade and we just all put on our headsets and suddenly we're in Mars. That would have made class so much more interesting.
Yeah, it allows you to travel, you know, space and distance and time and all those kind of cool things and go different places and explore. So I think it's getting there. It just, it's evolving technology, evolving content creators, and just seeing how this evolves, basically. So what about a funny or odd story you have from working in the industry?
I haven't been doing this too long, so I don't have too many cool ones. I have like small tidbits. So back when I was working at my media company where I made the Krones VR, we took the Krones VR project to New York and we were demoing it to some people.
Okay.
And it was a dentist company, I think. We were trying to see if like they wanted to use VR with their dentist stuff. Huh. So we set up, we put demo on, and these super corporate people are trying it out. And it's hilarious seeing super corporate people just try on VR, like, whoa. And so they put it on, they do the whole demo, and then we sit down to discuss mm-hmm. it. And then one lady's like, so how does it work? How does it, connect to your brain and show you the images? I was just stunned by her comment. I was like,
what kind of black magic are you doing with these boxes?
It's like, it shows you those images because there's a screen inside the headset. It's not, I don't know what that lady was on that day or where she was thinking, but I think she thought she was in the Matrix.
Yeah, right.
Like she put on this headset and her brain connected to a neural network and she's off in VR.
Can I go back to the blue pill now? If I was on the red pill, not sure. I want the red pill.
That was weird. That's something that I'm never going to forget about VR.
And what was it on? Like the I'm assuming were you the Vive or?
Yeah, we had the Vive. So like, and they also, they saw the setup. Like they saw there's two cameras, there's a laptop, there's everything. It's just, it's amazing that those words came
How
out
is this getting in my head? I do not, it's kind of like caveman lawyer phrases.
Yeah,
it's like, I don't understand.
Oh my God. what else? At Level X, we had a butt cake. So for the launch of Crohn's disease.
Or GastroX, right? The GastroX, we had a special cake made.
Yeah, GastroX. We were surprised with a beautiful butt cake.
Yeah, that was at, man, what was the name of that bar? We were at a restaurant and we had this giant cake and we were in a public place. People used to play pool there on Fridays. But yeah, I just remember people walking by looking at our butt cake kind of like, what is this? What? It's like, no, we're celebrating a game. It's called GastroX. And that was a good time.
That was a great day.
It was fun.
Another cool thing is, so we have a audio guy, Jeff Linville. So when I was trying to get him into Level X, which I annoyed you about.
Yeah, I thank you for annoying me because it worked out perfect.
Yeah, the dude's cool. So when I was, telling Ryan about this dude, I was telling him he's an audio guy. And he's like, oh, okay, cool. I don't know how it came out, but I told him that this dude works with Rapscallion sometimes. He's a YouTuber and he does a bunch of cool musician stuff. And Ryan came back to me one day and was like, hey, this Jeff dude is like, why is he in all of like Rapscallion's videos? Like he looked at his LinkedIn and everything and started connecting the face. And I'm like, oh yeah, Jeff works with Rapscallion. And then Jeff's cool points just like shout out like, oh my God, he works with Rapscallion.
Right. So all of a sudden, yeah, Jeff was like, wow, Jeff is the shit. We should talk to this guy.
Yeah, like I'm going to go shred with Jeff now. Like, and both of us play guitars and stuff. Huh.
No. And the backstory to that was Jeff, he took a video and he just did some sound design, you know, kind of on spec.
Oh yeah. So, we're doing, the Palm trailer and, we were looking for an audio guy or we were getting audio back and, from whoever we were buying audio from. And it was, I thought, was lackluster.
Yeah, I would agree.
I'd check, do a better job. And I gave him, you know, word about like, hey, we're looking for someone cool. And he made that whole trailer and I send it off to you. And I'm like, you should hire this cool guy. Listen to his trailer. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I looked at it and I went, this is cool. And I shared it with other people and they're like, wow, this is great. Who is this guy? And then that, you know, snowball from one thing to another thing. And he came on, he was a contractor and now he's our full-time audio designer.
Oh my God. His music for,
oh yeah,
for our newest app is just so good.
Cardio X has a soundtrack that will blow people's minds. Even if you're not a cardiologist,
it is so synthy and so good. I love it.
Including the metal track. But, I think, you know, a cool takeaway from that is instead of him just being like, I'm an audio person, you should hire me. And to be honest, it's tough, I think, being an audio person because you have to hustle all the time. It's there are a million people out there and it's, you know, how do you rise above the other ones? Well, you do what Jeff did and just do,
take initiative
and actually, you know, do sound design for a trailer for Palm X, which is what he did to actually make it tangible, to show it, not just like, you know, I'm audio person, hire me, but like, hey, here's what I can do. And when you show the benefit and then people can see it and hear it,
yeah,
then all of a sudden it became a no-brainer. It was like, yeah, let's get this guy working on our projects. And
it was totally worth it.
So yeah, again, that's great that you knew Jeff and that you bugged me and that he did that video and we shared it because, you know, it makes our product so much better. And the fact that, he took that initiative, not just here's my, link to my audio, you should hire me.
Yeah, like, here's my website. Please look at my sounds.
Yeah, and unfortunately, a lot of people do that, and they have to figure out a way to differentiate themselves, do something that ties back to the company that shows value, and then all of a sudden,
yeah,
doesn't become, should I talk to this person? It's like, I need to talk to this person, right? So it's cool that he did that. Okay, is there anything I should have asked you about but didn't?
The only question really is like, what do you think of the current state of the game industry?
Yeah. Well, I think money-wise, right? It's growing and it's still growing. And I can't remember how many billions of dollars. And when you have these breakaway hits with like, you know, Fortnite and Apex and PUBG and all this stuff going on, you know, it's exciting times. It's also, again, scary times, right? Because budgets get bigger and
it's getting so big and inflated.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I've kind of touched this, you know, on some other podcasts. There are so many things competing for people's time that it's not like it used to be 10 years ago where sometimes people would just sit down and play a console game. Now they can maybe, you know, watch something on Netflix or they can play a game on their phone. So
Even the competing for people's time is good and bad for who's ever trying to make a product. Because like, for example, everyone's trying to be the next Battle Royale. So you're fighting for everyone wanting to play your game. Mm-hmm. So Fortnite was doing really well on Twitch and everything. It had a bunch of followings. And then here comes Apex and steals that audience. And Fortnite's like, oh my God, there goes our people. And if that gets oversaturated, if everyone starts making a battle royale, there's a limited amount of people. There's only so much you can take away from that. So at some point, it's just going to be super saturated and you're just going to have like a small following. Yeah. It's becoming to the point where like there's too much games. Yeah. There is so many games out there, enough for anyone to just go on like on Steam and pick something.
Yeah. And well, it's trends, right? And there's companies that lead, you know, when it comes to trends, or they take a trend and they make a twist to it. And that's been going on for ages, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's how like Battle Royale started.
No, but like going like further back, right? Like there was a time when, you know, real-time strategy games were the shit, right? So like, you know, Red Alert came out, and you had Command and Conquer and all this stuff. So like
StarCraft,
you know, every game company and their uncle were making their versions of that. But unless there was some twist or some different element to it, or you did something better, you just got lost in the noise, because it's like, yeah, why would I play that? I could just play Red Alert, right? So I've seen it, you know, time and time again.
It happens with like every new game genre. Like it happened with RTS, it happened with like MMOs like World of Warcraft. Yeah. People were making other, you know, games similar, and now the whole Battle Royale is picking up. And now so Apex launched, and what was different about that game compared to Fortnite is it had a ping system. And now Fortnite has a ping system.
Right. Because they found a way to add their twist and kind of add value to it. And right now Fortnite's copying them, which is pretty wild.
So like sooner or later, we're all just going to be playing the same game because everyone's copying everyone.
It's inspiration. They're not copying. Yeah. No, but it was like that way too, I don't know, 10, 12, 14 years ago with open world games. You know, Grand Theft Auto was making a gazillion dollars. So, you know, all these companies were rushing to make their open world games.
Everything.
Yeah. And that's just kind of the way the industry goes. And who knows what the trend's going to be, you know, 2 years from now. So
ride the trends.
I think to be successful, you have to be at the front end of the trends or do that twist that adds to the trend like Apex did. Because otherwise you just kind of get lost in the noise and nobody cares. And okay. So where can people find you online, website, Twitter, things like that?
You can find me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is hgamboajr, hgamboajr. And then also on ArtStation. And that's my handle for ArtStation is Umberto G, HUMBERTOG. Okay.
Yeah, and I'm going to put it in show notes so that people can just click on the links and follow you and see the kind of cool stuff you're up to. All right. Well, Tito, this has been great.
It's been great talking to you.
I've enjoyed this, and I think our listeners will too. So take care.
Thank you. You take care too.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Game Dev Advice, the Game Developers Podcast. If you found it interesting or helpful, please leave a 5-star review. I'd really appreciate it. And don't forget to subscribe. I have a lot of great episodes coming out. As always, I want to hear from you, the game development community. So give me a call at 224-484-7733 or reach out on the website, gamedevadvice.com. I want to know your struggles, your questions, and your ideas, since the podcast is really about you, the fellow game developer, and our game development community. Thanks and take care.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.